So I'm going to open the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Information Technology for May 28th. And Sean, what do we got going?
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. Today we have a work session on the public employees retirement system. There are three information technology projects that they are pursuing through a policy option package in the general government subcommittee, and they're here today to talk about those projects, and then of course LFO is ready with Bob's recommendations. So
great,
and I'll go ahead and shift with Bob while we're starting.
Terrific, thank you. Come on up. Welcome. So we skip the briefing and let them do their thing.
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathan, members of the committee. My name is Bob Cummings with the LFO.
Yes.
Go for it.
Thank you. Co-Chair Riley, Nathanson, and the rest of the members of the committee. My name is Steve Rodman. I'm the executive director of PERS, and with me is Jordan Masanga. He's the chief information officer of PERS. What we're here to do today is present you with some with a presentation that goes over the technology strategies that we've developed in line with our strategic planning into the future, and then to get to the policy option packages that we have submitted in support of those strategies for the 15-17 biennium. So our budget initiatives are premised on three strategic priorities that we've identified in the planning work that we've done. The first is to build a flexible and extendable architecture so that other solutions can loosely integrate into Orion. What I'm talking about there is the fact that there have been a few changes to PERS over the years, and those changes will continue. And consequently, we need to have a technology package that allows us to move with those changes, not only with the changes in the benefit structure that this legislature may adopt, but also changes in, of course, demands of members who are interacting with us over the course of their career and after their retirement, to make sure that we're providing them with the kinds of services that are most efficient for them as they go through their life in planning and executing their retirement. The second budget initiative is to address architectural deficiencies and functionality gaps that are left over from the creation of this project. This project, meaning the creation of Orion and the jClarity system as a component of it, was authorized in 2003 when the new Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, or OPSERP, was created. And we were given 4 months of time to develop and install a system to support that program. The law creating OPSERP was passed in August of 2003. We had to start administering that January 1 of 2004. So that was a very quick purchase of an off-the-shelf package, which then moved into a conversion project to move off of our old retirement system of RIMS. That project was launched in 2004 and ran through 2011, cost about $30 million. And then once that was installed, given the fact, as Jordan's going to go through in more detail, there has been evolutions in technology and the platform that system is built on that we want to correct through the policy option packages that we've talked about. The last is to implement a fully tested disaster recovery plan and address our business continuity plan. We have a single site in Tigard, our headquarters building, that hosts our servers, and our servers have the retirement system data and information. We back that up, of course, but it's still operated out of a single location. And so our disaster recovery plan addresses development of a warm site, which will allow us, in the event of a localized outage, to move our operations to another platform. So that's the basic strategy behind that policy option package. So those initiatives are supported by an overall IT strategy that Jordan will now go into and explain kind of the bigger picture about how these specific asks fit into that broader picture.
So, Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, for the record, my name is Jordan Sanga, CIO at PERS. First thing is really explaining the IT strategy behind these asks. About a year ago, I invited folks from the business units, the managers, the administrators, to an off-site location. And what I really wanted to do is really kind of really understand what their strategies are from the business end and what I can do as an IT person to support those strategies. Out of that meeting, was a full-day session. At the end of the day, we ended up with these strategies. The first one is disaster recovery and business continuity, and Steve mentioned that briefly. The second is agile technology system. This is one of the things that the business really had a lot of pain points. Every time I touch something, things will break. I can't add on to the system unless I have some strong and foundational systems underneath it. I can't expand. There's some constraints in the system today. And this strategy is to address some of those constraints. The third is adaptive IT governance and management. That really is an effort to manage our process more thoroughly and more of a formal process. We are looking at ITIL and ITSM as that framework so we can operate within. So every time we make changes, it's repeatable and it's manageable. And lastly is to align all the strategies that the business units have identified along with IT, and that includes better member services, so better services to our member, as well as increasing our data reliability. So that was the strategy that we all agreed upon. So based on that information, I started to write the policy option packages. So the first one is package 102. Package 102 is to fully integrate IAP. So this is also part of Agile technology system. The objective here is to take a third-party administrator and bring that functionality in-house. And that is the first step toward the long-term plans for jClarity. I could have implemented IAP into Clarity. That just worsens the problem. What we have decided is develop IAP outside of Clarity so I can extend Clarity and not having to touch Clarity and break it. So that is the strategy with IAP admin. The second package is Orion maintenance and enhancement. So there are some existing problems I mentioned before, those constraints I mentioned, is to address these issues. There are a lot of things I'm going to cover later on that really prevents me to provide the service I need to give to my businesses. Part of that is the OpCert enhancement. So there are some really fundamental problems of OpCert today, problems that we have to do things manually outside the system. I'd like to address that. There's some things that we cannot calculate some of the divorce decrees in OpCert because of those constraints in the system. So this will address some of the functionality that lacks in Clarity. The third package is disaster recovery. That includes, as Steve mentioned, a warm site, a VDI infrastructure, virtual desktop infrastructure, as well as single sign-on that supports business continuity. So I realize, you know, money and the budget is important. I look at long term as how can I stretch that dollar. So when I look at SOA and I look at the exit strategy for Clarity, problem is that you have to start somewhere. The SOA ESB, services-oriented architecture, and enterprise service bus is a proven technology that's been used throughout the industry. That is one of the strategies for jClarity. Instead of building on top of Clarity, you're actually breaking apart and be able to loosely integrate together. That will extend the life of Clarity through 2020. That's what we're looking at. So part of that SOA ESB is IAP, a bunch of other functionalities such as rules engine, business rules integration, some of our content management integration, our general ledger, as well as our data warehouse. A part of that is too is the user experience. So one of the things that we're looking at is a virtual desktop infrastructure, VDI, that will allow us, in case of a disaster, be able to continue business anywhere remotely. So the other thing within the user experience is looking at increasing member services experience. So that includes mobility. More and more members are demanding other alternatives to access their data. We're also looking at social media and how we can leverage that that technology and better communicate with our members. We're also implementing electronic forms. Today we have PDF forms that our members have to fill out by hand and send in through email. Well, why can't we push that out to a portal and have them actually fill it out online without having to print it out and sending it in? Technology modernization is the third part. So there's a lot of things, as I mentioned, within Orion and Clarity that is 12 years old. It's just old. It's up to its obsolescence. Our batch process is antique. It's still very serial. Our correspondence and how we communicate and generate letters to our members are still dependent on batch technology. Our reporting is very siloed. There isn't a lot of information that we can all correlate with other data to create better reports. So there's a lot of things that I'm eyeing as far as modernizing the technology within the Orion system. And then lastly, governance. That's the ITIL. Creating some agile approaches to how we develop and manage changes, as well as better auditability.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Nerwin.
I'm sorry. I'm just a little bit drowning in acronyms here, and sure. So I just want to back up a little bit. So what you have here. So you keep talking about IAP. That's an individual account program. There. What is that? Is that me? I'm a PERS retiree, and I get to log in and find out what my benefits are. Or can you explain that to me a little bit?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Nerwin. That's the individual contributions that employees make to PERS. So 6% of your salary goes into your individual account program, and it then is an account that builds over your career. And then at the end of your career, you can elect either to roll it out, or you can take it in installment payments.
And so I can view the growth of my money over time, that kind of thing. Say, oh, I got $300,000 in there now, kind of thing.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Nerwin, you can, and here's the struggle. Today, that's administered by someone outside of our agency. It's a third-party administrator. So if you have questions about your IAP account and you call us, we have to log into their system to answer your questions. If you want to go online and do that yourself, you don't come to our website. You go to their website. And you have to log in separately into their website. And then, yes, you can track your contributions and earnings and all of those things and your distributions. But you're doing that all over there instead of with us, instead of a single point of contact.
Can I follow? Sure. So then you have Orion, which that's your in-house, the state of Oregon owns, and that's the PERS system, the computer system that drives PERS. And what you want to do is you want to integrate that IAP into Orion. That's the big picture of what's going to go on then, right?
Correctly.
And then when you're doing that, you're going to do service-oriented architecture. You're going to enhance the user experience. You're going to have better forms, and I assume you have some web forms instead of PDFs that you email in, those kinds of things. Okay. All right.
Got it.
Good.
Got it.
So then pick up where you left off.
Great questions. So if you next slide. So just a real snapshot of our current state technology-wise. Clarity and Orion is really hard to maintain. It's really tedious to change when things are required to change. It takes a lot of effort to test. If you make a change, there's a significant regression impact. Also, as we make changes, you're also increasing the complexity. So it's an ongoing high maintenance effort. So that's the current state. So what I see in the future is really leveraging service-oriented architecture. So how you do that is to componentize the functionality of Clarity. As you see there is the slices of the pizza. So each of the slices is a component. It's the major functionality within Clarity. As like we're doing with IAP, IAP is also going to be a slice of the pizza. As Representative Nierman has acknowledged, it is going to be part of Orion. So next slide is really kind of contrasting
can
between.
I interrupt?
Yes, oh. Representative Nierman.
I'm sorry, and I just got lost again. I just don't want to get lost here because early. So J Clarity, what part is that? I don't understand. What does that do?
So, Co-Chair Raleigh, Representative Nierman, JClarity is the retirement administration system, so it is the data gatherer. All of the employers report to us who worked, how much they got paid, employer contributions based on that salary, member contributions based on that salary. All that data comes into Clarity. Then when a member wants to have a benefit paid, the calculation engine sits within Clarity. So you decide you want to retire August 1, you're going to apply to us, we're going to pull your data, we're going to run it through our calculation engine in Clarity, we're going to spit out a monthly payment to you starting September 1 for an August 1 retirement, and all the rules related to how we calculate that are all embedded in Clarity. So if you had anything in your history that complicated that situation, we have to account for it. So that's why JClarity, as Jordan indicated, is quite complex and hard to manage, because when you change something here, you don't always trace to where it affects some other element of that. So if I may, just to give you some idea. So we already know how to assess, you know, collect data, compile it, present it, calculate a benefit, and pay it out. That is essentially a lot of what the IAP administrator does for us. So what's different in the service-oriented architecture is, instead of telling Clarity to do all of those functions for the IAP, you build another component outside of Clarity. So that other component, for example, will take in the application for the member for an IAP distribution. That application then goes into Clarity and says, what's in this member's IAP account? Oh, that much? Okay. So then go back out and tell the member, this is what your account balance is, this is what your payment's going to be. A payment needs to go out to this member. This application goes into Clarity and says, Representative Nierman gets an IAP payment this month. So the check goes out of our system. The information is compiled within our system. So when we issue a report, a tax report at the end of the year, your 1099-R, all of those functions are all things Clarity already does. There's just something else out here that says that all those things you're doing, do them for the IAP too. But you build the actual application that tells Clarity what to do outside of it, because it's easier to build it outside and integrate it than it is to build it within Clarity. How'd I do?
Good.
Okay.
So, can I follow just one little
please
thing? So now that's what my understanding of what Orion was. So now where does Orion fit into that picture?
So Orion not only has JClarity, but also has other components to it, like FileNet, which is our document management system. So FileNet is the system where JClarity sends out a letter to you that says, your disability application has been approved. We need to keep that letter. So that letter gets sent into FileNet and says, put this in Representative Nierman's file. So we have a record of all the things we've said to Representative Nierman over time. And workflow is also handled through FileNet. So when your application is approved, then that means it has to be calculated. So an event gets generated out of Clarity that now expects there to be a calculation to happen. FileNet integrates with Clarity and says, who's the one who's supposed to get notified of that event? Have they accomplished it yet? How long has it been sitting out there to be done? All of the sort of management functions that you'd want to have in a workflow process. So those are the two of the main components of Orion. There's also the hardware components, the
two components being the FileNet and the workflow management then.
Right.
And workflow management equals JClarity, or
no, workflow management is
talks to JClarity.
Is in FileNet.
Oh, workflow management is FileNet.
Yeah, FileNet is an IBM product.
Okay.
And that provides the workflow management and document management. JClarity is the retirement calculation data and calculation and data engine.
And they all reside within Orion.
Correct.
Okay.
So as I was mentioning, I wanted to contrast the technology back in 2003 when we started the reform into Clarity versus what we have today. So in the slide, just shows that Clarity is a very monolithic stack. So as I mentioned, if you make a change, it affects the rest of the components within that stack. Today and tomorrow in the future, what I'm planning to do is separate that stack. So whenever I make a change here, it won't affect anything else within that system.
And you truly believe that is true, that when you make a change in one of these subsystems, that it won't affect anything in the other systems, subsystems?
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
Okay.
I just wanted to hear you say that. Thank you.
It's a moot point anyway, because the Supreme Court has told us that we're not allowed to make any more changes.
So, again, this is this contrast between the technology of yesterday and today. So the next slide I really want to show you is the growing business needs since 2003. So Clarity, back in 2003, we just turned it on, employers started reporting. By the end of 2003, we gathered about 40 gigabytes worth of data. Since then, 2009 and today, that volume has significantly increased. The code changes are the actual code and the files that we actually touch. So when we turned on Clarity in 2003, right away we started caring and feeding it. We had to make changes according to the business, mm-hmm. and we have touched over 11,500 files. The batch window has significantly increased. So these are things that we have to run offline, off hours, to generate reports, to make the calculations. That window has increased from 8 hours when we turned it on production in 2003 up to 12 hours. In fact, tonight we have a 12-hour batch window that we have to run, because we have so many batch files that we have to run. It requires that much time to run because of the data. OMS is our member portal. So members will log in to their online member services account. We have seen a significant increase of hits on that website since we turned it on. So that's just an illustration how things have changed over time. The next slide is really showing the current state of Orion. And as I mentioned earlier, jClarity in that first, the top swim lane shows the stack I was mentioning about. The batch processing, letter generation, reporting, all that is all in one system. Now, I'm sure a lot of people are asking, why was it designed that way? Again, back in 2003, that was the architecture. That was industry best practice. All right, so things have changed. So the functionality as well, as Representative Nierman has acknowledged, and the boxes here represents the components within Orion. Now the next swim lane is our infrastructure. So these are our servers, storage, and our networking, as well as these silos of data that we're capturing. So that's our current state of our system. Now, the sharing and the reusability is very limited. The next page I want to show you illustrates how we plan to fix that, or at least remedy most of that. I'm adding a few more layers. And again, the reason why is to offer that agility I need. The first layer is the business application layer, and that's where jClarity sits today. IAP, when we introduce IAP, that's where it's going to sit. FileNet, as we talked about, they're all business applications. So my goal is not to continue building on top of Clarity, and that's where you see the X mark. What we want to do is build new solutions outside of that, and loosely couple it through the service-oriented architecture enterprise service bus. That's what you see below the lines there, is creating the messaging channel, that bus, to be able to do that. You know, the other layers just shows that we are really componentizing things. The service utility is really one area that I think we're going to get a lot of value for the business right away, as well as I mentioned, introducing with Policy Option Package 105, disaster recovery and the virtual desktop infrastructure.
So that's an overview of our technology and our strategy going forward. The next part of the presentation just gets into some detail of the policy option packages that we've put through with the governor's balanced budget. So I think we've covered a lot of the information and strategies behind these, and not to belabor them at any point, I guess I just want to go over them quickly to make sure that people understand what we're asking for and the context of each of these requests. So Package 102 relates to fully integrating the individual account program. As we've illustrated, we have a third-party administrator. We pay $2.2 million or so a year to have them conduct this administration by an investment over the two biennia of $2.9 million. We bring that functionality in-house and stop the expense of that third-party administration.
And what will it cost you to do it in-house?
That $2.9 million building the functionality, we won't need any more staff. We won't need any more ongoing costs. We do so much of the work now to upload to the TPA, it's double work, in other words.
Answer. Thank you.
Okay. This package was also one we considered in light of the Supreme Court's decision. So on the next slide, we talk about the timing. The Supreme Court decision came out, of course, when it did. We didn't have any advance notice of that timing, so we're reacting. In that reaction, we understand that we need to change the cost of living adjustment functionality in how we pay that adjustment every year. So we touched that functionality when Senate Bill 822 and 861 were passed in 2013. We built a new way to pay COLA. Now the Supreme Court has told us, not that way so much. So we have to build another new way to do COLA. The people in Jordan's staff who did that moved on to IAP because we had completed that functionality. So we want to bring three of those people back off of the IAP project over to the COLA project so we can wrap that up in this next year. And as a result, we would suggest that we move the schedule for IAP deployment out 6 months. So instead of finishing this project in 2017, we would roll into January 1 of 2018. Makes sense to do a calendar year cutover because that way we have all the contributions and all the reporting cleanly split between who's responsible for it. So no increase in cost as far as the dollars go, but we would suggest moving some of this funding that we originally requested out into the next biennia. Are there any questions on 102 just before I move on?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So the COLA thing that got broken with the 2013 law and then the Supreme Court kind of rebroke it they didn't roll it all the way back. That's in J Clarity then, right?
It is.
So you're going to have to do some work in an application that you're going to eventually jettison, that you're hoping to jettison, right? I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's a bad thing, but it's not your fault.
Politicians' fault. But, Representative Nierman, the good thing is, of course, that we built it knowing we might have to go back. So we're a month into the planning of this, and the Supreme Court did not give us a binary decision, not yes, no. It was like, do it this way.
Halfway.
Well, okay, great. So we're working on trying to figure out what that functionality looks like. But in any case, that's why the developers we're talking about are moving back, because they're familiar with how the system does COLA. It used to do 2% in a bank. Then we did it 1.25% to everybody with a $60,000 limit. Now we got to go back to, well, okay, all these people get 2%. These people are going to get some kind of blended COLA based on benefit earned before and after some date. We're working on that. But the people that are available to know how that system works are ones that we moved off of IP. We want to move them back on and extend the time on that. Okay. So package 104 has two pieces. And the one piece is the technical debt. Jordan covered quite a bit about how that architecture needs to be brought up to current standards. The other piece is some elements of OPSERP functionality, just things that weren't built into OPSERP when it was originally created. So the technical debt piece, the total ask on that is about $1.3 million, if I get to the right slide. So that technical debt piece is regardless of any sort of changes in the functionality of the system. That is just the nuts and bolts, the foundation on which it's built. So that work needs to proceed regardless of the fact that the Supreme Court has come along and said, do COLA a different way. We need to fix that regardless. The OPSERP functionality, which is $1.9 million, the bigger piece of this package, is one where I think we need to take a pause and think again about what it is we're going to change and how we're going to change it. Because not only do we have to change this COLA functionality now because of the Supreme Court, but there's also some other bills working through the legislative process that may cause us to change how we administer some elements of OPSERP. So that's a piece where I think we want to take a step back rather than going forward with the package as we presented it and take more time to go through the elaboration of what those changes should be. What do we need to do for the Supreme Court? What is the 2015 legislature changing? What is the total menu and how do we best address that menu? Questions on 104? Package 105, again, is just simply about disaster recovery. Again, we have a localized event we're trying to address. Want to have someplace else that we can bring up. And then if we have virtual desktop and single sign-on, then staff from anywhere can go into the system and do their work instead of relying on a location. So what does that look like? We have our headquarters building in Tigard. It sits on 68th Parkway right below I-5. Let's imagine, for example, a tanker truck comes off of I-5, rolls down into our parking lot, and our building is out of commission. The servers are down in the basement, and we can't get into the building. We have a satellite location in Tualatin where our production staff sits. They can't connect into the headquarters because the headquarters is out. If that production staff could instead connect into this warm site that we would define, then they could continue to do their work from that production facility. Those of us that would go to headquarters to do our work can instead sign in through any sort of internet portal, our home computers, for example, and have access to all the desktop applications and information that we have at our desk in headquarters. So it would allow us, in the event of that localized disaster, to allow staff to continue to operate and do their work.
Have you picked a site for that?
We haven't because we haven't gotten the authority for the funding of that and the design of that. That's what this package is predicated on.
So you've got to look for the site as well.
Well, the first thing we do is this something you want us to, is this the insurance policy you want us to buy? Because this is an insurance policy.
Yeah,
and if you say yes, then we're going to start looking at what does that policy look like. And so we have not gotten to that stage yet, Senator Riley. Again, this is so just to wrap up, package 105 is independent of, again, any work to be done on the Supreme Court decision because this is related to the hardware of the system, not anything to do with the functionality piece of it that we're trying to decide. So that's the completion of our packages as we presented. The last slide we had in our presentation is just a reference to some of those other dynamics I mentioned. The Morrow decision, of course, it's asking us to rethink how we do cost of living. Senate Bill 370, which changes some OPSERP benefits, adds a new benefit related to divorced spouses. House Bill 3495, which changes the contribution start date. Each of those last two legislative bills have fiscal impacts that we filed because we would need to change the way that OPSERP administers those aspects of our program. So with that, Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, we'll answer any further questions.
So any questions at this point? I'm going to close the hearing on this, and I'm going to open a work session on POP 102. And Representative Nathanson.
Mr. Chair, could LFO please summarize the recommendation in common language?
Please.
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. There are three separate POP packages that have been discussed to date. They're all closely interrelated, and there are three separate recommendations. The first POP package is 102, and that's to bring IAP into Orion in-house. The second one is to deal with technology obsolescence and enhancement needs for J-Clarity, and the third one is for disaster recovery and planning. And as I said, all three are closely related because depending upon what happens on J-Clarity, it could impact IAP, the Supreme Court stuff, the workload of the agency could affect all three of them. The first recommendation for 102 is, and if you, and I'll try to do this, I'm sorry, these are very, very voluminous and very interrelated and very complicated, but let me briefly tell you about 102 and the recommendation. First of all, the LFO and OSCIO and PERS all agree that there is a need, if you can save $2 million or even less if you have internal processing that has to be done to pick up the IP internally, that's something that needs to be done. Where we disagree on is, first of all, where we're at in the process. The agency thinks that they're at stage gate 3 and ready for execution funding. DAS OSCIO believes that they are at stage gate 2 and have given their endorsement there. LFO disagreed with that endorsement. And of course, we do a funding check right after that, and we believe they're at between stage gate 1 and 2. We disagree on where we think we're at. We also disagree on the readiness and the ability of the agency to execute, given all the other things that are on their platter, plus questions that that come up in 104 and 105, and all three of our analyses deal back and forth with those. There's, I think, a general lack of understanding on what is required for stage gate execution. And the following items need to be done in order to get money from the legislature to actually execute. Understand, the legislature typically gives agencies planning money only initially, and when they get that done and get the business case done and they feel comfortable, then you get additional money, and then finally you get up to the point where you're ready to execute. And at that point, we do a stage gate readiness assessment, and we all decide whether you're ready to go or not. And so what you have to do to get funding at this point in any project is you got to have stage gate 1, 2, and 3 endorsement by the Office of the State CIO. You then have to have LFO funding concurrence at the behind each one of those stage gates. And then you have to have quality control reviews of the foundational project management documents. The QA didn't even come on board on this project until 2 months ago, 3 months ago at the most. So those are not done at this particular point. Even if all the documents were done, the reviews aren't done. And then we do the stage gate readiness assessment. We have the agency do it, and we have the LFO does it. And you heard last week, OST will be sitting down working with the LFO to do that before they go forward on their projects. And then, of course, the final thing is that the legislature does the final funding approval, and that can be either by new funding for that particular execution phase, or it can be by rescheduling money that's already been set up. One of the dangers is, as Representative Nierman mentioned last week, is if you approve all the money at the front end and then unschedule everything and tell the agencies they're due planning only, in their mind, they're still thinking they got approval for all the money and they will spend everything and more, and that's just normal. I mean, it happens everywhere. So there's been some disconnects here, partially because the stage gate process is getting into play here, But those are the background things upon which the LFO has made its recommendations on all three of these. And I'll go through, if that helps at all, Representative Nathanson, I can go through the recommendations, but if there's any questions on that first, then I can go through the recommendation and explain why.
Go ahead.
Okay. LFO recommends for, this is POP 102, incremental conditional approval of POP option package number 102, assuming the funding and personnel resources are made available to PERS within the 2015-17 adopted budget. If we didn't think that there was a chance that PERS could get all the things remediated in the interim, the 2015 interim, we would have simply recommended disapproval and come back at the 2016 legislature with these things corrected to give some flexibility to them so that they could get these things fixed. We recommended that the money be approved and then totally unscheduled because they already have quite a bit of money that's been unscheduled already to date. In fact, they've been given $1 million in limitation. They've spent about $750,000 of that. So the addition of the LFO recommends that the entire expenditure limitation be unscheduled by DAS and that PERS be required to request the OSCIO, the CFO, and LFO that a portion or all the remaining unscheduled expenditure limitation be rescheduled for the agency to use to initiate and complete project execution activities when all the things that I listed earlier have been remediated and are done and they're ready to execute. The LFO further recommends, and there's 16 things specifically, but here's in general what we're asking them to do. Catch your breath and let's make sure that we all know where we're at, what our plan is to go forward, and make sure that we're not biting off more than we can chew and make sure we're taking into account what might happen in 104 and 105. And with the Supreme Court thing. Clearly document the actual status of the IEP project phases 1 and 2. Keep in mind that project phases 1 and 2 are not the same as stage gate 1 and 2. Okay? That's where some of the confusion comes in. Including deliverables completed, how much has been spent to date of the legislative approved $1,018,750 expenditure limitation, and what corresponding value was received for these expenditures. One of the LFO's concerns are that the legislature from the 2013 session only approved money for planning and business cases and that sort of stuff. We know that PERS has done some work that typically is not in the planning group. It's in the design or execution work. That's the proof of concept. That's one of our concerns, is that agencies tend to get busy doing real work. And so we want to know exactly what has been spent, what we got for our money, and what value. And that should be from their presentation. I think that should be pretty easy for them to provide us. Provide a clear written assessment of the impact of the Supreme Court's ruling. We have been provided some information in general that says we'll push things back a certain amount and this sort of stuff. We need to see more clearly the foundational stuff that that's built on to make sure, because our experience is that ITers tend to have a very much a can-do attitude, and we want to make sure they're not biting off more than they can chew. And so we're basically asking them to verify where they're at and what the impact is and show us that you can manage to do all the work you're proposing in the 2015-17 biennium, because they're adding stuff on top of what they're doing plus the Supreme Court. They have at a high level shown us some of the stuff already. We've met with it. We would like the detail that supports that to make sure. And we're just trying to be careful. It would be very easy for us to just not worry about it and then let the agency go out there and live with whatever happens. But we think, as part of oversight and with our background in having done this many times before, that we need to double and triple check and provide oversight on this. The legislative branch needs to do it. The executive branch needs to do it. Then we need them to clearly document the progress on the remaining stage gate 2 and 3 foundational documents. There's a disagreement as to what has been done, what's been accepted, and what hasn't, and none of it's been QC'd. So we need a remediation plan to correct that. And these are all things that frankly, is just due diligence. And put together a deficiency remediation plan
and tell us how you're going to get it done. And we've done this with multiple agencies over the last 8 years I've been here, and DAS has done the same thing when they've had concerns. And so we're concerned about J-Clarity. One of our concerns is that in POP 104, they're recommending that they go forward and spend $3 million plus maintenance to fix some technical debt and some enhancements. But when you look at it, it recommends that it's only going to stay alive till 2015 or 2020. Mm-hmm. Well, 2 years worth of work plus, and then you've got three more years of longevity. Well, it's confusing because if it's really only three additional years, maybe we ought to be looking at doing more than just patching this thing. And we have not seen a business case that goes back and says, we got an option. We can enhance this thing, and gain three or four more years of life, or we can replace it. So we want to make sure, because if we don't know what we're going to do with J-Clarity, it might impact what we're going to do with IAP, depending upon the interrelationships of the architectures. And then we think that PERS should provide the OSCIO LFO legislature with the results of all this work so that we can put together a control funding and release plan and make some recommendations for how to best proceed. The agency believes they're ready to proceed right now. Your LFO is concerned that there are too many questions and ifs here that need to be answered before we charge. And that's what the basic recommendation is, as complicated as it is, but that's because the POPs all interrelate so tightly.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion and then speak to it for a moment.
Is that all right?
I would like to move the LFO recommendation.
There is a motion that Representative Nathanson moves the LFO recommendation. Discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a typical recommendation. Usually the recommendation is to proceed in some degree, although we have certainly seen recommendations that modify an agency's plan or say, well, do it, but we expect this or we expect that, and maybe some money is unscheduled pending seeing some sort of result or some sort of product or response to something. This one is a little unusual, I guess you would say, but I think that's precisely what our committee is here for. It's to review projects, it's to ask for our staff's best analysis, and to make our recommendations then to the next committee that's going to look over this. I'm concerned that we're at this point because there's a clear need, absolutely a clear need. And if it wouldn't be too unusual, I'd like to tell the chair what my question is, and if you think it's appropriate for the agency to respond, that's fine, and if it's not at this point in the work session, that's okay too. It's just something to reflect on. I would ask the question of the agency that given that the staff and the members are all adversely impacted by an old and very deficient system. We all recognize that. Given that the recommendation says basically you're not ready to just launch into this full steam ahead, now what? So the question is now what?
Right. And I was going to ask them to come back up. I think that's a very appropriate. So if you would. So I would like you to respond to what you've heard.
Chair Riley and Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to do so. Mm. I think the LFO staff has assessed correctly the nature of the confusion being that the agency, LFO, DAS, OSCAO, do not have a common understanding of the standards and the progress needed to move through the progress of a project such as the IEP. So we have been in close collaboration with the executive branch, DAS and OSCAO, because that is, we're an executive branch agency, and we have not kept up with, or LFO has not been keeping up with, I don't want to characterize it one way or another, but we've not been in lockstep. We are absolutely committed to remediating that and want to get on a common page. Nothing is more frustrating to anyone to understand where we're at in a project without having a common understanding of how that's measured. My main concern is the time it takes to build that understanding and the time that is then delayed in the execution of the project when we have come this far in development of the requirements and recommendations that we need to build. So as an illustration, you know, this has been a two-biennial project, and phase one was a proof of concept, which we executed successfully. Phase two has been a building of the requirements gathering. We are going to close that out successfully. I understand that successfully from our evaluation and maybe not successfully shared with DAS, OSCAO, or LFO, but we are confident in where we're at in the project. The next phase is actually building what we need. The concern before we, the concern in delaying that is we lose the momentum of the people who are available to work on that effort. And the people available is principally through contractors, not so much our staff. Our staff will go off and do what they're asked to do. But we have a team of contractors who have been steeped in this work and are ready to proceed into the next biennium. If we hit pause for 3 or 6 months, there's no telling where those people may go. So that's my main concern. The longer that also that this is delayed, I'm on a year-to-year cycle with this IEP administrator. If I miss a January 1, I'm on the hook for another $2.2 million and growing every year by having to retain them for another year. So I certainly can't disagree with the LFO's recommendation. I wouldn't presume to do so. But I do think what we have here is a failure to communicate, as was so aptly said. And I think we just need to get all on the same page to do that. I think we can certainly do that while we proceed with the execution of these POPs. Whether you have the confidence in our ability to do so is up to you to judge.
Further, Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I kind of get it. I didn't get it earlier when I read the documents here, but really the 900-pound gorilla in the room is really the Supreme Court. And the silver lining of that is that the business case part gets done kind of for free.
Yeah, they did that for me. They did that for you. Thank you so much.
We don't want to hire them back, but but the business case part gets done for free on that, and this isn't going to go down as a model for how to run an IT project, and that's not an indictment of you or anything like
sure.
that. I don't think we have a choice, at least with the POP 102 kind of thing. Now, one question I have though is, it seems so we have some urgency there we have to deal with, and we don't have a choice, and we don't get to think up our own business case. But on the other hand, you have some things like you're introducing some complexity that makes me uncomfortable, like the service-oriented architecture and the disaster recovery scenarios, things like that. I don't know. Can you talk on that? Just if we're forced to do something, maybe we remove the complex elements and just do the stuff we're forced to do.
Co-Chair Riley, Representative Newman, I'd be happy to. First off, I'm going to take the opportunity to brag, if you don't mind. We're a month into this project that the Supreme Court has created for us. Thank you very much. We will go to our board meeting tomorrow, our PERS board meeting tomorrow, with a project plan and an execution plan to get this wrapped up in a year. within a year, I'll have corrected 130,000 benefit payments and get people on the right COLA structure. I know I can execute that. The reason I can execute that is because this is what PERS does. This is not the first time we've been handed something like this. We've done this before. We also knew and knew how, so we know how to do it. We knew how to get ready for it in the circumstance that the Supreme Court was under review. So I don't mean to minimize the amount of work that we're done. I mean, it sounds daunting to send 120,000 supplementary payments, bad term, but, you know, catch-up payments in October and pledge to do that. I've got the confidence in my staff when they tell me they're going to execute on that. So I can, when we enter the 2016 session, I will report to you that I'm done with implementing the Supreme Court's decision. All I have to do is wait till next July 1 of 2016 and pay the right COLA going forward. And I'm going to be ready to do that. The only hiccup on that is, what's the right COLA? Because we're going to probably go through a judicial process to determine whether we think the way that the Supreme Court told us to do it is the right way to do it.
Does the development of the SOA, does that help you or does that hurt you?
The SOA is already developed. That's what the proof of concept was in phase one. So we know how we're going to build this IAP functionality totally outside of the Supreme Court decision. Implementation is totally outside of the IAP functionality. Two completely different bodies of work. So to brag on my staff just a little bit more, if I may, again, 1 month, we're in, we're done, we're ready to go. And I got people volunteering to get on this project, running toward the challenge, not away from it. I think the only thing that if we put a delay on the IAP, those people are going to feel like, well, wait, we want to get involved too, because we want to keep going while these guys are having all the fun. So that's just the way we do things. And so I can understand LFO's concerns, and we haven't had the opportunity to lay out a staff plan or a resource allocation sheet to show them how we think we're going to get this all done. And I may be overconfident in what my staff tells me they can do, but we've been pretty successful in all the years I've been at PERS in executing on what we promised to do. So I'm sorry, long-winded answer, but we're confident we can move these forward. We're just so committed, particularly to IAP administration and getting a bad situation remedied. And it's not bad for any particular person or fault. It's just that we created this third-party administrator out of necessity. We're ready to resolve that and get our members on a better platform. And so the longer we delay it, it's just enduring the punishment to our members to have to go to two different places and endure two different systems. We'd like to solve that because we think they deserve better.
Thanks.
So what we hear quite often is that the agency would like to get going and would like to get things done. And that's part of where we've seen in the past failures. And not saying that you can't do it, but I am saying that this is part of what we've seen as contributing factor to failures, big failures. And so my tendency is to slow you down and ask you to go through the process, get back in communication, get back in sync with LFO and with OCIO, and see where we are, where we go from there. I tend to also agree with Representative Nierman that, you know, getting you letting you go with a Supreme Court fix is almost, we don't have much choice. And so my tendency is to say, yes, do that. And while you're doing that, catch up with LFO and OCIO and see where we are, and then let's go from there. How does that fit in with what you just said?
Coach O'Reilly, Co-Chair Nathan, members of the committee, what you've just communicated is exactly what our analysis is recommending, and
The decision that you really have to make here is a tough one, in the sense that you have to decide what the potential consequences of failure to act are, which is to keep spending additional money for IEP, and weigh that against the benefits of starting earlier on something and the risks of trying to do too much at one time, to put so much effort into the Supreme Court one that the others tend to not get the attention they need, even though everyone thinks they should. While the agency has made quite a bit of progress from their perspective, it's also taken a long time to get a solid business case, a QA, and things of that nature. One of the major problems we had with Cover Oregon was that the agency was trying to do way too much at one time and didn't take anything off its platter because it made commitments or had a can-do attitude. That's the real decision that you have to make here, is how much money are you willing to spend to hold your breath here for 3 to 6 months and get back on track, where with a well-disciplined approach, versus charging forward and potentially saving some money. But if things go sideways, folks will come back and ask why you weren't prudent on where you're at, and that's the decision.
And Coach Harrelli, can I just address one of the elements of what LFO just said? And I just want to make sure it's clear that the disconnect between the progress that we've made or where we're at in the progress, I think, is a lack of understanding. It isn't a lack of desire on anyone's part to get everybody on the same page. So the stage gate methodology is something that's been developed and overlaid this project. It wasn't designed to go into it, but we're understanding absolutely of the need to do that. So LFO staff said a couple of times, for example, about how delayed we've been in getting the QA on board. The delay was not because we weren't ready. The delay was because of the procurement it took to go through DAS to get a QA vendor on board.
Yeah.
That was the time it took. It isn't that we weren't at the stage of the project. It was because, wait a minute, here's a new thing we have to do. How do we do a new thing? And there's always going to be struggle around that. Mm-hmm. So we are definitely working our way through those processes, and everyone's learning, and everyone is committed in doing things the right way and the appropriate way. And, you know, as you say, if you think it's more prudent that we step back and take a deep breath, that's where your direction to do so.
And I do believe that, but it's going to be up to not just me, but the committee. And so I want to hear from the rest of the committee. Senator Thatcher, do you have any comments?
No, I just heard what Chair Nathanson was saying about we have a very unique committee, and I appreciated the LFO comments, but it is confusing what data. I don't know if I have much to add to the conversation here.
Okay, thank you.
Only that I am. I've heard these cautions before. We had this kind of a conversation several years ago when I was on the committee with the. Legislative Audit Information Management Technology Committee, and I think we should have been more appropriately cautious then. I think that this is the approach that we need to take right now, because we want to make sure that we do it right.
So we have a motion to accept the LFO recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? So ordered. That was POP 102. I'm going to open a work session on POP 104. Do you want to give us further?
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, I believe that there's no preparatory comments on this one. The previous POP covered those. We're prepared for Alpha, prepared to make its recommendation to you.
Go ahead.
POP 104, J Clarity is a long-standing product. It's used all over the place, including where I worked in CalPERS in California. It does. It is at a point where its architecture is older and ultimately will need to be replaced. The question on this one here is, how bad is the problem given where you're at, and how bad is the need to fix it, and how long would you be fixing it for, and have they done an analysis of really all the options? Maybe we should just replace it or use a SAS or whatever. The LFO, based on those thoughts, the LFO recommended the funding for this not be approved, not because we don't agree that these things probably need to be done, but rather that we feel some additional analysis needs to be done, such that we're sure that when we spend this money, we're just not spending it and then a few years from now throwing it away. And that's why we made this recommendation. It does not mean that ultimately they could not come back and ask for this exact same thing, but there was not foundational work in place that made the LFO feel comfortable that we wouldn't be seeing another pop here in a few years to replace this whole thing after we enhanced it, and is it worth spending $3 to $5 million for that duration when they've put up with it? The consequences of failure to act didn't seem to be that bad. Now, if this system's going to run another 20 years, it might be a different situation. But when they recommended it, it probably would just extend the life to 2020. That got our attention, and we feel, and the recommendation reflects that. The LFO recommends that the funding not be approved, and that we further recommend that some amount of expenditure limitation be provided for the planning work needed to complete a detailed assessment of the current J Clarity environment in order to determine its current state and how best to proceed in dealing with the problems identified in POP 104. The LFO feels that that an outside vendor or someone in-house that is familiar with the system could do that health and needs assessment and determine, you know, the real state of it and what needs to be done. Should we just enhance it? Should we replace it? Should we go to a SAS? And so we have three recommendations. One is to have that done and then turn around and figure out the best plan for going forward and then come back to the legislature in the 2016 session. And again, this is a cautious recommendation, but one of our concerns is we just put this product in not that long ago, and as you remember, it got three major hits during its lifetime. And so the original thing started this big, and then it got enhancements. Now we're just a few years further along, and we're enhancing it, but we're already discussing replacing it again. And I realize that systems don't last 20 and 30 years anymore like they used to, but I'm always cautious about spending this amount of money when we might spend it. Instead of putting it into an old car, maybe we should put it into a new one. And so that's the LFO's recommendation, that we don't fund this, but we do fund an assessment, get the homework done, and have them come back and make their recommendation then, where we'll feel comfortable that all these things have been taken into account. We also want to make sure that any impact that any of these other projects might have on this are taken into account in those assessments.
Representative Nathanson.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
The motion is to accept the LFO recommendation and transmit that to the Substantive Committee. Discussion. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. I just wanted to recall here publicly that it does happen occasionally that once a project gets underway, those persons reviewing the project, overseeing the project, and maybe even the ones designing it have an epiphany and realize, oh, there's a different way to do this. It might relate to how much time it's taking, how much it's costing, or there's just a better mousetrap. But I'm remembering what happened with the e-court system. There was money and time expended on going one direction, and after a lot of work and some frustration with the state of affairs, it went a different direction. And then things moved very quickly, And as I understand, that eCourt system, once the direction was changed, it started to be implemented quickly, and people are very satisfied with basically their second plan. They were going on one path, changed paths, and now Plan B seems to be working out just great. So it's not unprecedented to say, well, you know, we thought we were going to do it this way, but as it turns out, we figured out there's a better way. That happens sometimes.
Further discussion? Objections? So ordered. I'm going to open close that work session. I'm going to open a work session on POP 105.
Coach O'Reilly, Coach Nathanson, members of the committee. POP 105 deals with, and again, this one, the LFO could not agree more with the agency for the need to have proper disaster recovery and business continuity planning stuff and work, particularly as I'm getting nearer and nearer to retirement myself. The questions that we had on this one here had to deal with more of do we know exactly where we're at in their disaster recovery planning efforts? Do we know exactly where they're at on their business continuity planning efforts? Do we know exactly where the status of their business continuity plan, disaster recovery plan? And from the materials that were provided to us, even though the agency has clearly said this was a point fix on things, we felt it was important that we know clearly the whole state of disaster recovery and business continuity planning, and then a plan to go forward for which this is one of the first steps in it. And therefore, your LFO recommended, again, incremental conditional approval of the POP, assuming funding and personnel resources are made available to PERS within 2015-17 adopted budget. It also recommends that the entire expenditure limitation be unscheduled by DAS, and that PERS be required to request to the OFSCIO, the Chief Financial Office, and the LFO approval that a portion of all the remaining unscheduled expenditure limitation be rescheduled for agency to use to initiate and complete project execution activities. Again, what we're trying to do there is to give the agency the opportunity to correct some things and then come back and ask for the money in charge. And how quickly they address these things means they could step forward. There were 13 recommendations, but I only hit the most important ones. Obviously, the agency was very open in their disaster recovery tape sequencing, and they know to get that up to a daily basis. That is just a piece of what their concerns were. I think that the agency made it very clear the magnitude of this. It's not a matter of just you know, doing tapes 5 days a week. It's a matter of putting a really robust DRBCP process in place. The second thing is conduct a detailed risk assessment of the current PERS disaster recovery and business continuity environment. It is possible that the agency has a very clear picture of where they're at and their alignment with the DAS requirements for business continuity and that. And if they do, then it would be a fairly simple process to prioritize it and put a plan together to go forward and include the things that they've asked for in this POP early on in that priority list. And then we think that they should also take a look at the business continuity disaster recovery policy and procedures manuals, make sure those things are current and up to date because they all work together. And then we feel that they should do an analysis of, again, their workload. One of the things we found on eCourt, on Owen, on Cover Oregon, on DOR Taper, I could go on, is the fact that agencies take on way too much at the same time, and some of the projects they're proposing impact this disaster recovery stuff, and so we would ask again that they take a look at their workload and make absolutely sure that they're not going to make, you know, 80% progress on one project like the Supreme Court thing and 2% progress on all the other things that come there, and that does happen, okay? I've done it myself. So
And then we'd like to see a prioritized go-forward plan for addressing these things and going forward, and then a balance of the recommendations are our standard go-forward boilerplate. Again, we're asking you to stop, better define the problem and the situation, put a plan together, come back, show it to the appropriate folks, get approval to get money rescheduled, and then go forward. And that can be done as quickly. If you already have a lot of that stuff in place, that could be done very quickly. If not, it may take a little bit to do it, but it's to your advantage, and it'll give us a better idea of what you're recommending and how much of the overall problem you're really solving. That's your LFO's recommendation.
Representative Nathan.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Motion is to accept the LFO recommendation and transmit it to the appropriate policy subcommittee. Discussion. Representative Nearman.
So on this, there's a capital outlay in there for, what is it, $1 million. Why not? Why aren't they not using DAS ETS? First of all, why aren't they using DAS ETS for their just their production systems? And then why are they not using it for their DR systems?
Well, that's, I think, something that they might consider now.
So that's an option. That's part of the, they're not far enough along in the planning then. Huh?
I think that's correct. They're not far enough along in the planning to tell us that at this point. Would you like to?
Thank you, Co-Chair Riley, Representative Nearman. That's the hosting a warm set at ETS could absolutely be one of the solutions out of this. It's sort of a chicken and an egg. You know, are you as a legislature willing to accept the need to address this disaster recovery? I'm getting the message you clearly are. You need some more detail about what those plans are before you want to release the funding for them. I absolutely get that. The reason we're not using ETS is because when we were putting our JClarity system and Orion system together, the compatibility wasn't there. We built it in-house. There's always the question about where that should be hosted and what the challenges are to it. And I think, at least conceptually, ETS would be a great place to have a warm site. There's still going to be a capital outlay because we would still need to purchase the equipment that sits in ETS for us to access should we need it. So I think that's maybe where the budget request came from. How'd I do?
Good.
Okay.
Thank you. Further discussion? Objection. So ordered. Close the work session and we're done for today. Meeting's adjourned. It's adjourned. We're done for today. Meeting.